This is a bonus episode of the Children's Literature Podcast, inspired by a challenge from my buddy Pedro, who wrote in to say, "In the Cinderella show, you said Rocky is a Cinderella story. I don't buy it. Change my mind." A few months ago, in my episode called "What is a Cinderella Story?", I gave examples of tales that fit the basic pattern. Sometimes you find them in unexpected places, such as the 1976 film Rocky. That's not a children's book, but I love Rocky films so much that I will take any excuse I can to talk about them. So just for you, Pedro, I've created a new feature here that I may do occasionally. Let's call it "The Kids Are in Bed." Once in a while, there may be a topic that's adjacent to children's literature, but is the kind of discussion we grown-ups amuse ourselves with at the end of the day. So I've put on my comfy clothes, poured myself a nice fizzy water with a lime wedge in it. Hey, it's Friday, I'm getting crazy here. And I'm all ready to talk about how much Rocky Balboa has in common with the most famous housemaid-turned-princess in literary history. As Rocky Balboa accepted the challenge of Apollo Creed, so too do I accept this challenge and step into the critical ring to prove I can go the distance. And we're talking the original Rocky, the one that started them all. No Roman numeral at the end, not Rocky Balboa, not the Creed saga, just good old Rocky. We tend to think of Cinderella stories as being for children, but they're enjoyed by adults too. Once in a while, you even get a movie that's a Cinderella story for grown-ups, like Rocky. If you haven't seen this movie, first, go watch it. Pause this podcast, go watch Rocky, and then take some time to come to terms with the fact that you've been missing out on this perfect movie for so much of your life. Okay, are you back? Great, let's recap the plot. Rocky is an uneducated, barely literate, not even working-class guy from a slum in Philadelphia. He has no family, lives in a tiny, disgusting apartment, and works for a loan shark who sends him to beat people up when they don't pay in a timely manner. He's also a small-time amateur boxer who has talent but has never made anything of himself. He gets no respect from anyone, least of all the people he works for. Rocky's life seems pretty hopeless. He can't even get Adrian, the nice girl who works at the pet shop, to talk to him. This is partly because she's very shy, but also because she very sensibly does not think of him as a catch. Adrian has her own problems, mainly her cruel, drunken, brutish brother Polly, who makes her do all the cooking and cleaning, calls her a loser who ain't sharp, and says she'll die alone because she's nearly 30 and still single. Rocky eventually convinces Adrian to give him a chance, and Adrian develops enough self-confidence to treat herself better, even finally telling off her horrible brother and moving in with Rocky. But still, Rocky doesn't seem to have any way to make things better for himself, and nobody has any interest in giving him a hand up. Until Apollo Creed, the current heavyweight boxing champ, a pugilistic prince, if you will, decides he wants to have a match against an unknown local fighter. He chooses Rocky because he likes the sound of his nickname, the Italian Stallion. It's the first lucky break Rocky has ever caught in his life, and he decides to seize it. Rocky prepares for the fight with a tough training regimen. He drinks raw eggs. He trains in the freezing cold. He punches dead animals. He trains with Mickey, the world's crankiest boxing manager. At last, the day of the fight arrives. Rocky was a nobody, but now he's in the ring with Apollo Creed, the heavyweight champion of the world. Creed had failed to take his opponent seriously, and instead of studying Rocky and focusing on training, he spent the weeks before the fight surrounded by his courtiers, working on his marketing strategy. In the first round of the fight, Rocky knocks him down. Nobody has ever done this before, and the champ realizes that this is now a proper dance. not just a publicity stunt. The two men give it everything they've got for 15 brutal rounds. By the end, they're injured, exhausted, but satisfied. Each has fought magnificently, and they respect one another, promising that there will be no rematch. Spoiler alert, Rocky II is about their rematch. The judges declare Creed the winner in a split decision, but Rocky doesn't care about the outcome of the fight. He proved to himself and to the world that he could go the distance. Ignoring the crowd and the reporters, Adrian and Rocky call out to each other, embrace, and the story ends as they proclaim their love for one another. In the show notes for episode 2, What is a Cinderella Story?, I included an activity to help students write their own version of a Cinderella tale. I'll use the worksheet I made to show how Rocky fits the pattern. Where is the story set? Inner city Philadelphia in 1976. That can seem the exact opposite of a fairy tale setting, but it isn't really. Fairy tales tend to begin in pretty ordinary, unimpressive places. Hansel and Gretel live in a wretched little cottage. Cinderella sleeps in an attic. Snow White becomes homeless and has to couch surf at a rundown, off-the-grid place in the woods with seven dudes for roommates. And Rocky Balboa lives in the world's most disgusting studio apartment. Who is our Cinderella? Rocky, of course. Although Adrian is also a Cinderella in her own way. The wicked stepmother is Mr. Gotso, the nasty loan shark. Gotso is a horrible person who makes Rocky do horrible things. He even has a smart mouth sidekick who torments Rocky, perfectly playing out the stepsister role. A second stepsister is Polly, who is Rocky's only friend and a pretty lousy one at that. This unintelligent, cruel, abusive alcoholic is also Adrian's brother, making him an evil stepsister to her as well. I think I can also say that the world in general is a bit of a wicked stepmother for Rocky. Inner city Philly in the 70s wasn't exactly an awesome place to be, and the previous decades would have offered little to help a child grow up with health, safety, secure social connections, and an education. If you think of a Cinderella character as someone who is socially and economically trapped at the very bottom of society, then Rocky's a pretty good example. Rocky's a nobody, and he knows it. Nobody seems to care about him. He spends a lot of time moving around his filthy, derelict neighborhood, and it seems like he knows everybody in the area, and they all know him, but the contact he has with others is always brief and meaningless. The longest conversation he ever has is with his boss, who yells at him while he avoids eye contact. He's a school dropout who very unconvincingly uses a pair of reading glasses while trying to read or write to hide the fact that he can't read or write. He can't get a job doing anything that requires more skill than punching people. It doesn't seem like any of his relatives are alive or in touch with him, so he's hungry for human connection. He's messed around with boxing for 10 years, but it seems he'll never go anywhere with it, leading the gym owner Mickey to give away his locker. All of this explains why he nervously rambles every time he sees Adrian. He just wants to matter to somebody, and he awkwardly dumps out his words in front of her, because nobody else will listen. Despite this ugly environment, Rocky remains a really sensitive, decent guy. He lives in a brutal world, but he's not a brute. A Cinderella character has good traits that shine through grimy surroundings. Kindness, patience, forgiveness, hopefulness, and the courage to grab hold of that one chance when it's offered. When the loan shark sends him to break a guy's thumbs, he decides not to, instead just strongly urging him to pay up. He goes out of his way to take a troubled girl home when he sees her with a crowd of bad boys. For the gritty streets of Philly, Rocky is quite the Disney princess. He even sings and dances. Very briefly, but he does. He sings on his way into Adrian's house before their first date, and in the famous scene in front of the art museum, he does a little jig. Rocky has animal sidekicks. He talks to the birds at the pet store and keeps a goldfish named Moby Dick and a couple of turtles named Cuff and Link. Fun fact, these turtles are still alive, living very happily at Sylvester Stallone's house. Rocky also gets a giant slobbery dog named Butkus. There are a lot of story patterns that start with a downtrodden character, but what makes someone a Cinderella is a sudden, serendipitous event that offers one amazing day away from the drudgery, and perhaps even a very long shot at a new and better life. Enter our prince and his ball, Apollo Creed and the Bicentennial Heavyweight Championship. Apollo is a prince in every way. His name comes from the ancient Greek sun god, who was the son of the king of the gods. Apollo patronized poets and musicians, was admired for his perfect physique, and was the national deity of ancient Greece. Apollo Creed is the heavyweight champion of the world, displays eloquent showmanship, has a perfect physique, and revels in patriotic flair, reflecting the traits of his divine namesake. There's just one problem. Apollo has nobody to dance with. A huge fight has been scheduled for New Year's Day in 1976 to celebrate the start of America's bicentennial year. But his opponent has to drop out when he breaks his hand. When Apollo is interviewed about this fight on television, he calls it a gala, while wearing an overcoat draped over his shoulders like a cape. In a Cinderella story, there's often a king who throws a festival so that all the young women can be presented to the prince as possible mates. In Rocky, there's a scene where Creed and his crew desperately consider their options. They flip through all the lists of names. None of the other pro boxers are available. Then Apollo gives a speech, which tells me that Sylvester Stallone was deliberately writing a fairy tale. This is the land of opportunity, right? So Apollo Creed, on January 1st, gives a local underdog fighter an opportunity. A snow-white underdog. I'm gonna put his face on this poster with me. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm sentimental. And a lot of other people in this country are just as sentimental, and there's nothing they'd like better than to see Apollo Creed give a local Philadelphia boy a shot at the greatest title in the world on this country's biggest birthday. Apollo's promoter says he likes it because it's very American. But Apollo says, "No, Juergens, it's very smart." Apollo says Snow White, which isn't referring to an opponent's skin color. It's explicitly name-checking a fairy tale character who's rescued from a bad situation by a prince. Let's see what happens when I read Apollo's speech, but with a few words changed. The prince, on January 1st, gives a local girl an opportunity. A Cinderella underdog. I'm gonna put her on this throne beside me. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm sentimental. And a lot of other people in this kingdom are just as sentimental. And there's nothing they'd like better than to see the prince give a local common girl a shot at the greatest title in the world on this country's biggest birthday. The chance being offered to Rocky is identical to that offered to all the maidens in the kingdom in Perrault's telling of Cinderella. But first, the prince has to choose Rocky, and this happens because he's lucky enough to have a cool nickname, the Italian Stallion. Apollo chooses him out of a book of local fighters just because he likes how that sounds and recognizes that it will work well for marketing. Apollo Creed meets the Italian Stallion, he says. Sounds like a monster movie. Little does Apollo know that it's more like a rom-com, as he and Rocky are about to enter a bromance that will last until the end of his life. Apollo issues the challenge, and Rocky's life will never be the same. This magic, serendipitous moment makes everyone reconsider Rocky. When Cinderella arrives at the ball, nobody sees an abused, neglected drudge. She has a fresh chance to make an impression, and everyone sees a princess. Rocky's been similarly lifted up, and now everyone who wrote him off is intrigued. He gets a cranky, gruff, surly fairy godmother in the form of boxing coach Mickey, who previously wrote him off as a boxer who could have been great, but wasted his talent. Now Mickey pleads with Rocky to take him on as manager. Mickey needs a fairy godmother, too. He was also once a talent, but never really went anywhere because he lacked resources and a team. This is also his last chance to do something great. At first, Rocky angrily refuses, feeling resentful about Mickey's previous criticisms. But then he realizes that everything the gruff old man said was true, and they start training. This whole time, Rocky has been getting together with Adrian. The camera work and the actors do a great job in the early scenes of showing that Adrian is interested in Rocky, but she's painfully shy and rightly suspicious of a guy who beats people up not only for his day job, but his hobby, too. It doesn't help that her disgusting, abusive, hard-drinking brother with whom she lives constantly runs her down. Polly calls her dried up and a loser. Her brother has no redeeming qualities at all and will fulfill the part of the horrible stepsister through the whole Rocky saga. Polly seems eager to set Rocky up with his sister. I can only imagine that Adrian figured that any guy Polly would choose would be as violent, angry, and cruel as he was. But luckily, Rocky's the complete opposite. Adrian and Rocky fall for one another, and their first kiss in his absolutely disgusting apartment shows two people overwhelmed and relieved that they found someone to be happy with. Adrian has been Cinderella to Polly, cooking, cleaning, and obeying him to avoid triggering his temper. But once she starts spending time with someone who treats her like a person, she gains confidence. One night, when Polly is especially nasty, she finally explodes. Fed up with his cruelty, vulgarity, and sense of entitlement, she screams. Maybe for the first time in her life. "What do I owe you? I treat you good. I cook for you. I clean for you. I pick up your dirty clothes. I take care of you, Polly. I don't owe you nothing. And you made me feel like a loser. I'm not a loser." It's the speech every Cinderella could give to her horrible family. Adrian leaves the room, and when Rocky goes to find her, she's perfectly calm. "You want a roommate?" she asks. "Absolutely," he answers. Every time I watch that scene, I want to high-five my TV. Adrian's transformation is even more satisfying to watch than Rocky's. At the beginning, everything about her is small. Her voice is barely a whisper. She's hunched over and covered up, and by the end, her posture is straight, and she's wearing more colorful clothes. In the final scene, she confidently pushes through an enormous crowd to get to Rocky and shout that she loves him. She says it first, just like she's the one who suggests that they move in together. This confidence is so nice to see, and it all sparks from that first date with Rocky. While Polly still had a hold over her, she never believed that she deserved anything good. "I don't belong here," she says twice to Rocky, just before their first kiss. And I think what she's saying is, "I still believe what my brother says. I'm a loser. I don't deserve to be happy, and nobody should ever want me." But luckily, she sees that she's wrong, and she lets herself love and be loved. There's still one more love story to wrap up here, and that's the one between Rocky and Apollo. When the day of the big fight arrives, Rocky's ready. He knows he can't defeat the champ, but he's determined to make it through all 15 rounds to prove to himself that he can go the distance. He's not wearing a ball gown, but he does get a very nice yellow robe to wear, with an advertisement for a meatpacking company on it. At least it's made of silk, though. Apollo enters like the prince he is, dressed as George Washington and surrounded by star-spangled finery. As in the grand ball of a Cinderella story, the announcer notes that there are too many important people present to even try to name them. A truly dazzling royal court. Apollo's made a big mistake, though. He was so focused on the ball that he took his dance partner for granted. While Rocky trained hard, punching sides of beef in a cold warehouse, running the tough streets of Philly at 4 a.m, and doing one-armed push-ups, Apollo focused on marketing. He had so much confidence in himself that he believed he'd win in the third round without breaking a sweat. So when Rocky knocks him down in the first round, the first time this has ever happened to Apollo, he is shaken. Suddenly he realizes that this is really a fight, not just a show. Over 15 rounds, the two men dance with their fists while the royal court watches and shouts. By the end, Apollo's ribs are cracked and Rocky's eye is bleeding and swollen shut. But they both get what they want. Apollo wins, even if it's just barely. But Rocky shows himself and the whole world that he could go the distance. The film concludes with Rocky and Adrian hugging and saying, "I love you." In the following films, Apollo really does become Rocky's handsome prince. They begin as rivals, and Rocky later takes Apollo's title from him in a rematch. When Rocky is in turn defeated, Apollo becomes his trainer and helps him regain the throne. They become the closest of friends, frolicking together on the beach. When Apollo is killed in an exhibition match by the evil Soviet villain Ivan Drago, Rocky avenges his beloved friend by defeating Drago in Moscow at great risk to himself. And while I don't think the Creed movies are overall very strong, they do have a bit of poetry to them in the way that Rocky ends up becoming mentor to Apollo's son. Rocky and Adrian take Perrault's approach to their evil stepsister Polly. He ends up living with him and they never throw him out, even when his irresponsible behavior ends up costing them their home and all of their money. That's pretty forgiving. I'll admit I would have been fine with a more Brothers Grimm type ending for Polly. I don't want to see his eyes pecked out, but some sort of comeuppance for his bad behavior would have been satisfying. Another interesting twist is how the loan shark, Gotso, chooses to go from being an evil stepmother to a bit of a fairy godmother. In the beginning, he doesn't seem interested in stopping the bullying Rocky gets from his bodyguard, but he later gives Rocky $50 to pay for his first date with Adrian, seeming to genuinely want it to go well. When Rocky gets his big chance, Gotso doesn't seem to mind that he's lost his enforcer. In fact, he gives him $500, no strings attached, to fund his training. Gotso's a very small character, but I had the impression that he recognized that Rocky was a guy with a good heart, and he didn't actually want him to continue doing a job that weighed on his conscience. All of the good characters in this movie, when you think about it, have a bit of a fairy godmother role to play. Mickey is the most obvious one, sure, but Rocky also godmothers Mickey by letting him have one last chance to be involved in a big fight. Rocky godmothers the wayward girl Marie, although it's uncertain if she takes his advice to heart. And in his self-serving way, Polly godmothers Rocky by getting him a shiny silk robe to wear to the ball, so he could net $3,000 by sewing an advertisement to the back. And there it is. Rocky is Cinderella. He was a nobody, but he gets one big chance to go to the big dance and comes home not just with the princess, but with the prince too. The only thing that's missing is something to do with a shoe. The script is even explicit about the fairy tale connection. When Rocky enters the ring, one of the reporters in the film calls the event a Cinderella story. So, have I convinced you, Pedro? I hope you've enjoyed this little detour from my regular episodes. I intend to stay focused on works for kids, but once in a while we grown-ups need fairy tales too. The thing I love most about Rocky is that it just makes you feel good. It reminds you that there's no such thing as too old or too late. There's no such thing as, I don't belong here. When we tell fairy tales to children, we often emphasize the possibilities of life. But as we grow up, we tend to see how possibilities become closed off one by one. It's easy to give up on ourselves because we think that our chance has passed us by. Certainly as we age, more paths are no longer available to us, but this doesn't mean we're all out of opportunities. We can continue to live as if we're in training for that big chance, and we'll be more ready for it when it comes along. I'm not recommending that you drink raw eggs, but I think you can look at how hard Rocky pushed himself and take some of that for inspiration. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. subscribe in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters at childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.